Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Wikipedia reading of Australia. I'd obviously done a few South American countries into the Indian Ocean up to the Drusil states at the Persian Gulf states, I suppose they're called, going around Oman and Yemen, and for me it was a bit of a brutal reading, because you read the early history and yes, sort of strange, it's got a lot of history. Australia's obviously got a lot more history as well. Well, I suppose it's got the longest history of any continuous history on Earth. The Australian Aboriginals probably here 60,000 years ago, very, very quickly. And there's beginning to understand how Australian Aboriginals got to Australia so quickly. And it's a pretty amazing population, a pretty amazing history. However, these other places have a great history. Then you start to hear about human rights abuses and poor education and degraded environment and just insane inequality and stuff like that. And you go, oh. And so you thought, you sort of try and explain things that are slightly different. Now, in this case, I am Australian, in Australia, and so I'm going to try and read the Australian Wikipedia article, which for me is rather interesting. And immediately you see that, because Australians read and edit Wikipedia, as opposed to people from Yemen and stuff like that, there's a lot less. There may be some fingers down the bottom of your throat, chunderific, making you want to vomit stories here. But there's not sort of bad English or repeated stuff. From my scanning, there may be repeated stuff. That is stuff which is said one way. It's just a multi-author problem. You have something which is making one point and uses constructs and doesn't know about the next section, which uses the same information in a slightly different way, so repeats it. So that's a bit of a problem, an issue when reading Wikipedia articles. We get back into the reading the article. There's the Australian coat of arms, which is refreshingly not an eagle and doesn't have weapons in it, but it does have a bird, which has got an emu in it, but it's an unreadable coat of arms here. And I'll start reading it here. Australia, officially the Commonwealth of Australia, is a sovereign country comprising of mainland Australian continent, the island of Tasmania, and numerous smaller islands. It is the largest country in Oceania, the world's sixth largest country by total area. The population of 26 million is highly urbanised, I can tell you that for sure, heavily concentrated on the eastern seaboard, which I'm concentrating at the moment. Australia's capital is Canberra. Though its largest city is Sydney. The country's other major metropolitan areas are Melbourne, Brisbane, Perth and Adelaide. Well, really it's only Melbourne. Oh, yeah. Indigenous Australians inhabited the continent for about 65,000 years prior to the arrival of the first Dutch explorers in the early 17th century, who named it New Holland. Bit of a problem. And the initial occupation of Australia, or the British occupation, it was very sort of gingerly went around the Holland problem. In 1770, Australia's eastern half was claimed by Great Britain and initially settled through penal transportation to the colony of New South Wales from the 26th of January 1788, a date which it became Australia's National Day. It became Australia's National Day, but it was declaration of whatever it is. The proclamation. Okay, the proclamation was what was the proclamation? The proclamation was in 26th of February, so a few weeks later. It was claimed by Australia, but they claimed everything. I claim it wasn't really big thing. The population grew steadily in subsequent decades, and by about the time of the 1850s gold rush, most of the continent had been explored and additional five self-governing crown colonies established. Well, yeah, okay. On the 1st of January 1901, the six colonies federated, forming the Commonwealth of Australia. Australia has since maintained a stable, liberal, democratic political system that functions as a federal parliamentary constitutional monarchy comprising of six states and 10 territories. What I was going to say is, it has been stable. There's been no, an uprising. We'll see if it's covered there. There's been no revolutions. Australia is the oldest, flattest, driest inhabited continent, with the least fertile soils. Nailed it all in one. The soils are absolute crapola here, given the fact that it's a great person thing for people selling stuff. So we do have sort of large fertile areas equivalent to other countries, but given, you know, we're not like the United States with a huge area. It has a land mass of 7,617,000 square kilometres. A mega diverse country. Its size, Its size gives it a wide variety of landscapes, with deserts in the centre, tropical rainforests in the northeast, mountain ranges in the southeast. Australia generates its income from various sources, including mining-related exports, telecommunications, banking, manufacturing, and international education. Perhaps not so much more with the coronavirus. Australia is a highly developed country with the world's 14th largest economy. How it does that, I do not understand. It has a high income economy with the world's 10th highest per capita income. It's a regional power and the world's 13th highest military expenditure. Yes, we do, but we sort of all spend it in building an expensive boat, you know, like 10 times the cost of actually purchasing it in the open market. So, or the military expenditure is to cover a huge area of, like it's huge. It's a cover there. And I would say that the there's a lot of money spent on the elites, but not on the reserves or us little territorials at the moment. Okay. Immigrants account for 30% of the population, the highest proportion of any country with a population of over 10 million. Okay, yeah. So there are a lot of immigrants here. Having the third largest human development index, the first highest human development index, and the eighth highest ranked democracy globally. The country ranks highly in quality of life, health, education, freedom, economic freedom, civil liberty, political rights, with major cities faring well in the global comparative livability surveys. I think we're up in the top 10, stuff like that. But that being said, it's still a pretty corrupt and graft, and, it's, yeah, officially, it's a big rubber stamp, but then when you dig a little bit deeper, so-and-so's the cousins of such, or so-and-so's a representative, but he doesn't bother to represent people. Well, so it's great that we have, in theory, politicians, and at least they care that people call them corrupt, whereas I think overseas you just have the, if you called someone corrupt overseas, you just have the police attack you or something like that. Here it's just known that our politicians are corrupt. Okay. Australia is a member of the United Nations, G20, Commonwealth of Nations, ANZUS, Organisation of Economic Cooperation, OECD, World Trade Organisation, Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, Pacific Islands Forum, and the ASEAN Plus 6 Mechanism. I think we're in the Plus 6. Okay, and just the name, Australia is 52% Christian. Stick your fingers down the bottom of your throat when you hear that. Insufferable. Okay, but at least we have got 30% no religion, which is fantastic. And then the rest, there's obviously, that leaves about 20% for, you know, under 20% of other things: Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, Sikhism, Judaism, others. Aboriginals also go in there, so I don't know how that goes in there. Aboriginals are predominantly Christian. Look, the I would say, yeah, there is 52% Christian. It is, but it's not a religious form of Christianity. Or it's sort of, you know, there is. It's a bit sad. Now let's turn over the page. The name. The name Australia, pronounced Australia, in Australian English. There is such a thing as Australian English, but I'm actually reading it at the moment. It's derived from the Latin terra australis, means southern land, a name used as for a hypothetical continent in the southern hemisphere since ancient time. When Europeans first began visiting and mapping Australia in the 17th century, the name terra australis was naturally applied to the new territories. But I have to really remember there was someone who, there was some person, was it Flinders, some person who really kicked it over. Until the 19th century, Australia was best known as New Holland, the first name applied by the Dutch explorer Abel Tasman in 1644. And he went over to, when he discovered New Holland, he also discovered the new section corresponding to the islands north of Holland, Zeeland, and he called them New Zealand as well. The name Australia was popularised by the explorer Matthew Flinders, who said it was more agreeable to the ear, assimilation of names of the greater portion of the earth. Several famous early photographers also made use of the word Australia on the map. Metcalfe used the phrase Clamata Australia on his double conform map of the world in 1538. And Gemma Fiscus, whatever he is, who's Mecca's teacher and collaborator, on his own conform map in 1540, Australia appears on a book on astronomy by Psycho Jacob Barth, published in Frankfurt am Main in 1545. So, g'day. But there is this popular belief when you're hearing you hear Australian philosophers speak, or religious people speak, that all people are Australian, because you hear, and God, Jesus said, and this person says, what did Jesus say in this huge Australian accent, and you can't help but cack up laughing. For the first time, Australia appears to have been officially used was in 1817 by the Governor Lachlan Macquarie, who acknowledged the receipt of Flinders' charts of Australia from Lord Bathurst. In December 1817, Macquarie recommended to the Clunie office that it be formally adopted. In 1824, the Admiralty agreed, and the continent should be officially known by that name. The first official published use of the name came in the publication of 1830, the Australian Directory, by the Hydrographic Office. So that's you know, you've got all other countries, you know, great names. We were fought people, you know, big crusades, people, romantic poems and stuff like that. And we came out of the Hydrographic Office. Colonial names for Australia includes colloquial names, Owls, Land Down Under, usually shortened to Down Under. Other epithets include Great Southern Land, the Lucky Country, the Sunburnt Country, the Wide Brown Land. The latter two both derive from Dorothy McClure's 1803 poem, My Country. And I can say, thank goodness they're not writing this. This is the most worst, awful country I have ever heard in my life. Indigenous history, Indigenous people. Human inhabitants from the Australian continent known to have begun nearly 65,000 years ago with the immigration of people by land bridges and short sea crossings from what is now Southeast Asia. Well, I must admit, they're not short sea crossings. The shortest crossing was over the horizon, about 100 kilometres. And to do that is sort of like pretty amazing. The Majibi Rock Shelter in Arnhem Land has recognised the oldest site showing the presence of humans in Australia. The oldest human remnants found in Lake Mungo remains dated around 41,000 years ago. These people were ancestors of modern Indigenous Australians. Aboriginal culture is one of the oldest continuous civilizations on Earth. And One would say, point to another one, point to another one, which is over 41,000 years ago, you know, old. You can't get North America because Americans only came 14,000 years ago. You can't do Europe because they're 30,000 years ago. And so it's pretty amazing. At the time of first European contact, most Indigenous Australians were hunter-gatherers with complex economies and societies. Recent archaeological finds suggest that a population of 750,000 could have been sustained. Indigenous Australians have an oral culture with spiritual values based on reverence of the land and belief in the dream time. The Torres Strait Islanders, ethnically Melanesians, obtained their livelihood from seasonal horticulture and resources of the reefs and seas. Northern coasts and waters of Australia were visited sporadically by the Massacan fishermen from what is now Indonesia. A bit of a complex thing there. Some of that is right. It's interesting that Torres Straits, we do have Aboriginals and Torres Strait Islanders. We don't talk about just Aboriginals by themselves. So we have two indigenous groups here. Be interesting. There's a lot more to that. European arrival. The first recorded European sighting of Australian mainland was first recorded by the European landfall of the Australian continent in 1606. It's attributed to the Dutch. Well, the Dutch did it. They left plaques and walked and mapped, and you know, I think they saw it. The first ship and crew to chart the Australian coast and meet with the Aboriginal people, the Dufonkin, captained by navigator William Jazun, he sighted the coast of Cape York. And later that year, the Spanish explorer Su Vaz de Torres sailed through and navigated the Torres Straits. The Dutch charted the whole of the western and northern coastline and named the land New Holland during the 17th century, but made no attempt at settlement. William Dampier, an English explorer and privateer, he's a pirate, not a privateer, a pirate, landed on the northwest coast of New Holland in 1688. A pirate who tended to raid foreign, an English pirate who raided non-English vessels, when it's not classed as a pirate, they're classed as a privateer. Landed on the coast of New Holland while serving as a crewman under Captain John Reed. Oh, that is the most worst thing. That's not true. He got rid of Captain John Reed that's incorrect. He got rid of Captain John Reed in Buenos Aires, which he then spent the entire time setting up a court-martial for him when he came back. Again, in 1699, on the return trip... Oh, okay, well, these are things I really don't understand. There's two journeys. Okay, well, this is an interesting thing. This is... I read his memos, his history, and I have got it completely wrong. There are two... voyages 11 years apart. In 1770, James Cook sailed along and mapped the east coast. He named New South Wales and claimed it for Great Britain. Well, one of the most important things is that he was, Cook was mapping in Canada for the American, for the British attack on the French, and met a German land mapper, who showed him how to do it, and then he produced fantastic maps using this mathematical technique of triangulation and astronomy, the combination together to make it. But along the line, he tried to name one place South Wales, and they said, oh no, sorry, Hudson's Bay is already named South Wales, so he now named the new place New South Wales. In 1770, James Cook sailed along and mapped the east coast and named it New South Wales and claimed it for Great Britain. Okay, when he's at the end, he said, kind of for Great Britain, with the loss of the American colonies in 1783, the British government sent a fleet of ships, the First Fleet, under the command of Captain Arthur Phillip, to establish a new penal colony in New South Wales. A camp was set up on an Union flag raised at Sydney Cove, Port Jackson, on the 26th of 1788. Correct. A date which later became Australia's National Day, Australia Day. The British settlement was established at Van Diemen's Land, known as Tasmania, in 1803, became a separate colony in 1825. The United Kingdom formally claimed the western part of Western Australia, the Swan River Colony, in 1828. Now, this is interesting in that that was a real estate development by, I've forgotten who was it? It was a real estate scheme, not a Ponzi scheme, but a real estate scheme. And, it was a private enterprise thing. So, Perth, South Australia, New Zealand are private enterprise countries. So, you've got the British government, and these are private enterprise companies. Now, Wakefield, I think Wakefield is the thing. Separate colonies were carved in from parts of New South Wales, South Australia, in 1836, Victoria in 1851, which is really interesting. Australia, Victoria didn't come across, and Queensland in 1859. Poor New South Wales got chopped off, and it turned out to be the size of France. The Northern Territory was founded in 1911 when it was excised from South Australia. South Australia was founded as a free province. It was never a penal colony. Victoria and Western Australia also founded free, but later accepted transported convicts. A campaign by settlers of New South Wales led to the convict transportation to that colony. The last convict ship arrived in 1848. Well, this is, it was a brilliant book called The Case Against Australia. One of the things they haven't mentioned here is Central Australia. It's a fantastic little state which lasted 10 years. Before it was dissolved. It was amazing. The indigenous population declined for 150 years following settlement, mainly due to infectious disease. Thousands more died as a result of frontier conflict with the settlers. Government policy of assimilation, beginning with the Aboriginal Protection Act in 1869, in the removal of many Aboriginal children from their families and communities, referred to the Stolen Generation, a practice which has also continued to decline the indigenous population. As a result, about the 1967 referendum, the federal government power to enact special laws with respect to a particular race was extended to enable the making of laws with respect to Aboriginals. Traditional ownership of the land, native title, was not recognised until 1992, when the High Court held a Mabo versus Queensland No. 2, that the legal doctrine of Australia became telenars, belonging to no one, did not apply to Australia at the time of British settlement. That was absolutely brilliant, because the state had won the case, and then went in for the kill. And when they went in for the kill, they actually proved themselves wrong. And so they tried to get this little piece of tribal land off Eddie Mabo, and it just backfired brilliantly. It was such a great thing that they actually prove themselves. It was a really interesting case, that one. A gold rush began in Australia in early 1850. The Eureka Rebellion against the mining licence fee, so that's our big rebellion, in 1854. So that was sort of similar to lasted an hour or so of shooting and rushing the barricades and troops and stuff like that. Similar to the Zanzibar War of 38 minutes. Okay, but the entire thing is that the people who on the barricade and fought became instant celebrities and politicians. Between 1855 and 1890, the six colonies individually gained responsible government, managing most of their own affairs while remaining part of the British Empire. The Colonial Office in London retained control of some matters, notably foreign affairs, defence and international shipping. On January 1st, nationhood. In January 1st, 1901, Federation of the Colonies was achieved after a decade of planning, consulting and voting. this is sort of planning and voting is just the most ridiculous stuff you've ever heard. So whereas America had this great person, people riding on horsebacks and great speeches, we had these really pokey committees and people going into inane detail, sort of like, you know, I suppose the way the Americans would organise their garbage or something like that. This is the subject of the Commonwealth of Australia as a dominion of the British Empire. The Federal Capital Territory, later named the Australian Capital Territory, was formed in 1911 as a location for future Federal Capital of Australia. Melbourne was a temporary seat of government in 1901 to 1937 while Canberra was being constructed. The Northern Territory was transferred from the state of South Australia government to the Federal Parliament in 1911. Oh, there's nothing there, but they transferred in two bits, which is an interesting aspect of it. There you go. We're a dominion. Canada is still a dominion. So it's a separate country, but not quite. In 1914, Australia joined Britain. Well, we should have talked about joining them in the Boer War, fighting World War One, with the support from both the outgoing Commonwealth Liberal Party and the incoming Australian Labor Party. Australians took part in many of major battles fought in the Western Front. Of about 500,000 who served, about 60,000 were killed, and another 152,000 were wounded. So, a good quarter of the people wounded, and this is the entire male population. So, for a population of 4 million, I don't know what it was, 3 million at that stage, 500,000 people, 500,000 able. Bodied males, that's pretty well anyone who could even lick a postage stamp. Many Australians regard the defeat of the Australians and New Zealand's Anzac Gallipoli as the birth of the nation. It's the first major military action. The Kokoda Track Campaign is regarded as mainly as analogous to the mentioned founding event of World War II. Everyone knows about it, but Britain's Statute of Westminster in 1931 formally ended most of the constitutional links between Australia and UK. Australia adopted it in 1942, but it was backdated to 1939 to confirm the validity of legislation passed by the Australian Parliament during World War II. The shock of the United Kingdom's defeat in Asia in 1942 and the threat of the Japanese invasion caused Australia to turn to the United States as a new ally and protector. Since 1951, Australia has been formal military ally to the US under ANZUS Treaty. So, wherever the US says, because of that, wherever the US says us to go, we're there, sort of almost before, ahead of the Americans. Not quite, but at least we're not killed. Because we get killed, so I think in Vietnam we lost 50 soldiers. So there was a big sort of gulp. We lost 500 soldiers all up, but that was including disease or falling off a thing, mostly road accidents and things like that. So 50 in combat. So there's a big sort of shudder when the COVID virus went past, the various death tolls of 30 for Afghanistan, 50 for Vietnam. Okay. After World War II, Australia encouraged immigration from mainland Europe since the 1970s. The following abolition of White Australia policy, immigration from Asia and elsewhere was all promoted. As a result, Australia's demographically culture self-image was transformed. The passing of the Australia Act in 1986 ended all possibilities of any vestigial role of the British government in the government. Australia and removed already seldom used option of judicial appeals to the Privy Council. In 1999, referendum, 50% of voters, majority of every state, rejected the proposal to become a republic, and the president appointed by 2/3 of both houses of Australian Parliament. Since the publication of Landmark Critique, The Lucky Country, and by Donald Horne, the election of the Whitlam government in 1972, there has been increasing focus on foreign policy, on ties to the Pacific Rim nations, while maintaining close ties to Australian traditional allies and trading partners. What a boring history. It's not people invading, not it's just sitting there and being so, I think, it is actually really interesting, the different convicts going in and the different ebbs and flows. So there's these beautiful things. We did have a, what's it called? Strawberry Hill Rebellion, when we had an Irish uprising, when American whaling ships were in and the people thought they could escape the colony. And then we had Strawberry Hill. We had a few rum rebellions. We had a few uprisings. We had some very interesting influx of Irish revolutionaries. My grandfathers were Irish revolutionaries, but sort of undercover Irish revolutionaries. And my great-great-grandfather was an Irish highwayman, or musician highwayman. It's pretty interesting to come across. But apart from that, it's all been fairly... I'm sorry, that's a really boring history. Geography and environment, that's why it's so short, the Wikipedia article. Surrounded by the Indian and Pacific Oceans, Australia is separated by Asia by the Afar and Timor Seas, the coral seas lying off the Queensland coast, the Tasman Sea lying between Australia and New Zealand, the world's smallest continent, the sixth largest country in total area. Australia, owing to its size and isolation, is dubbed the island continent, and sometimes considered the world's largest island. Australia has 34,000 kilometres of coastline, excluding offshore islands. Well, yeah, if you'd use fractal maths, you get an infinite coastline for no matter how small things are. And claims an extensive economic zone of 8 million square kilometres. This exclusive economic zone does not include the Australian Antarctic Territory. Apart from Macquarie Island, Australia lies between the latitudes of this and that. What I was going to say is that we also have some seamounts, which we're claiming. I don't quite understand how that works. The Great Barrier Reef is the world's largest... why can't China just claim a seamount? Australia's Barrier Reef is the world's largest coral reef. It lies a short distance off the coast of northeastern eastern coast and extends over 2,000 kilometres. Mount Augustus is claimed to be the world's largest monolith. This ice is located in Western Australia. I do not have not heard of this. At 2,228 metres, Mount Kosciuszko. Yeah, what I was going to say. This is Mount. I don't know what. Mount Augustus is different from Es Rock or Uluru. The coral reef is the size of Italy. It's just if you get a map of Italy and whack it off Europe. Italy's actually not that big when you actually, from the world map, it looks big when you look at a map of Europe, or actually there, but it's actually not that big from space. Take that off and pop it in the sea, that's the size of the Great Barrier Reef. Okay, at 2,228 metres, Mount Kosciuszko is the highest mountain on the Australian mainland, and indeed you're not allowed to actually remove any soil from the top, because you will actually physically reduce Australia to the flattener. Even taller is the Mawson Peak on the remote Australian external territory, Antarctica. There you go. So that's page 4 across here. Interesting, Australia. Heard Island and... in the Australian Arctic Territory, Mount Mackenzie's much higher. What? Oh, that's amazing. I don't understand that. Australia's size gives it a wide variety of landscapes with tropical rainforests, northeastern mountain ranges, southeastern, southwestern, southeast, desert in the centre, desert or semi-arid land, commonly known as Outback, makes up by far the largest portion of Australia. Australia is the driest inhabited continent. The annual rainfall average over the entire continental is less than half a metre. The population density is 3.2 inhabitants per square kilometres, although the large proportion of the population lives in the temperate southeastern coastline. Eastern Australia is marked by the Great Dividing Range, which runs parallel to the coast of Queensland, New South Wales, and much of Victoria. Major thing is that Australia has moved up over this hot spot, which has caused the mountains. So there's a volcanic hot spot, and similar to Hawaii. So we've got sort of subterranean shield volcanoes pushing up. So our mountains are actually sedimentary rock sitting on top of these shield volcanoes, this huge volcanic system. Okay, eastern. The name Great Dividing Range is not strictly accurate because parts of the coast lower. Range consists of low hills, and highlands are typically no more than 1,600 metres high. Not really high. The coastal uplands and a belt of below grasslands lie between the coast and the mountains. While inland, the dividing range, the area of grasslands. These include the western plains of New South Wales, Edinburgh Highlands and Buckley Tablelands, Mulga Lands of inland Queensland, and the northernmost point of the east coast, the tropical rainforest of Cape York Peninsula. Yeah, so eventually there are we have the, between the Great Dividing Range and the coast, there's some grasslands, and on the other side there's grasslands, and then it turns into a desert. The landscapes of the top end in Gulf Country, with their tropical climate, include rainforests, woodlands, wetlands, grasslands, rainforests, and desert. At the northwest corner of the continent, there are sandstone cliffs and gorges of the Kimberley. And below the Pilbara, to the south of these and inland, there's more grassland and the Ord Victoria Plain and the Great Western, the Western Australian Mulga shrublands. At the heart of the country are the uplands of Central Australia. Prominent features of the centre include Uluru, the famous sandstone monolith. The inland Simpson Desert, Tarari, Stuart Stony, Gibson, Great Sandy, Tami, Great Victoria Desert, and the Nullarbor Plain. Of course, the Nullarbor Plain is the flattest, most boring place you can possibly see. If you want a landscape before it's been rendered, that would be it. What I was just trying to think is that I've got to go back and see this largest monolith, Mount Augustus. Well, that would be, I'll tell you what, we haven't heard about it. It's probably the most boring, largest and most boring monolith. There. Okay, so we'll just continue reading it. Okay, geology. Lying on the Indo-Pacific Plate, the mainland Australia is the lowest and most primordial landmass on Earth with a relatively stable geological history, i.e. no earthquakes. The landmass includes virtually all known rock types and all geological time periods spanning 3.8 billion years of Earth history. The Builder Callan is one of the only two pristine Archaean 3.6 to 7.8 billion years ago crust identified on Earth. Having been part of all major supercontinents, Australia's continent began to form after the breakup of Gondwana in the Permian. The separation of the continental landmass from the African continent and the Indian subcontinent. It separated from Antarctica over a prolonged period beginning with the Permian and continued to the Cretaceous. So I've just got to work out there's the Permian. I'm just really trying to understand the dinosaurs and going there, Cretaceous. Now, I'm just trying to get in my head, there's the there's the Triassic, Jurassic, and Cretaceous. Isn't Cretaceous the most recent dinosaur one? When the last glacial period ended around 10,000 BC, rising sea levels formed Bass Strait, separating Tasmania from the mainland. So the Aboriginals have been there more than that time. between about 8,000 and 6,500 BC. The lowlands of northern Australia was flooded by sea, separating New Guinea, Aru Islands and the mainland Australia. The Australian continent is currently moving towards Eurasia at a rate of 6 to 7 centimetres per year. So Australia is actually on the move. I thought that was 2 to 3, but it's obviously sped up since the Wikipedia has written. The Australian mainland continental crust, excluding the thinned margins, has an average thickness of 38 kilometres, with a range of thicknesses of 24 to 36. Now, one of the things is that the bigger it is at the top, the deeper it is at the bottom, but maybe we're wrong. Australia's geology can be divided into several main sections, showcasing the continent grew from east, from west to east. The Archean Cartonic shields found mostly in the west, Proterozoic fold belts, and the Phasaic sedimentary basins, metamorphic and igneous rocks in the east. Oh, okay, so the west is far more ancient, and the east is sort of building up on it. The Australian mainland and Tasmania are situated in the middle of the tectonic plate and currently have no active volcanoes. Bullshit completely. Due to passing over the eastern Australian hotspot. Okay. Well, let's see. Recent volcanism has occurred during the Holocene, the newer volcanic provinces in Western Victoria and Southeastern Australia. Volcanism has also occurred on islands off New Guinea, considered geologically part of the Australian continent, and in part of Australian external territory, Heard Island and McDonald Islands. Seismic activity in Australian mainland and Tasmania is also low. The greatest number of fatalities occurred in the 1989 Newcastle earthquake. I think we had 18 or something like that. What I was going to say is that there is actually an active volcano. Australian active volcanoes have no water, so there's no steam, there's no volatiles in it, and so unwarmable. They've got a city on top of an active volcano, but nothing's happening. It's just lots of lava just moving underneath it. Okay, so I'll finish that for the moment and see how things are. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.